Good afternoon, everybody. I am not Steve Hallstrom. My name is Michelle Comer, and I'm here today sitting in for Steve. Welcome on this wonderful sunny Wednesday afternoon. I am a talk show host wannabe. This is my second time guest hosting for Steve. I don't know why he let me come back after what happened last time. I'm just kidding, guys. I am also, during the day, the owner of an HR and benefits firm called High Road Partners. And I want to give a shout out to my team who let me out of the office today to be here. At High Road, we provide HR and payroll support to companies when they need HR. And everybody needs HR. We're also a full-service benefits brokerage. We work with employers and also people who are turning 65. Did you know that 10,000 people every single day turn 65 in the United States? Yes, they do. They can come to us for help. But that's enough about High Road, and that's enough about me. Guest hosting this show is a dream come true. My next dream, which I've said before, is driving a Zamboni. And I am 100% sure there is someone out there listening today who can make that happen. So for the first time, I want to give you our studio line. It's 701-232-1100. That's the Valley Christian Counseling phone line. Give us a call. You're not going to believe the guest lineup we have here today, but if you have a Zamboni, give that line a call. If you want to email us at studio@flagfamily.com, email us. We want to hear from you. And our text line is 701-237-1590. All right. Well, we do have the most amazing lineup of guests on this beautiful summer day in North Dakota. To celebrate our guests and this weather, the theme of this show tonight is Inspire. So let's talk about Steve behind his back on the radio in front of, you know, thousands and thousands of listeners. Isn't he the absolute best? Addison is nodding over there. Text me some advice. Tell me what you love about the Steve Hallstrom show. Text that to me today and I'll try to apply it. But you can't say Steve because I can't change who I am for you today. I wish I could. I wish I could be Steve. I'm a Steve wannabe too. But let's go back to our guests. So today, in the next couple hours, we are going to have a chance to visit with Tammy Bachmeyer. She is a pilot, and we want to ask her what she is thinking about all the plane crashes that we are hearing about lately. After we talk to Tammy, we are going to have a chance to spend some time with Michelle Cody. She is a small business owner with an unconventional and courageous career path. Can't wait to hear more about that. After that, we will meet Cody First of 50 South, who will educate us on the North Dakota Growth Fund and all things venture capital. And then we're going to close our first hour and cross into the second crossover. That's a pun. You'll get it in a second. With Representative Greg Steeman, who's going to give us a North Dakota legislative update. So get your questions ready now. But that is not it. Tonight, we are going to have a shorter program because we're going to flip over to live coverage of the MSUM playoff game at 5:45 tonight. Go Dragons! But we have reserved plenty of time to get to know North Dakota's First Lady, Kirstie Armstrong. Can't wait to visit. So having heard that, get excited. Get your questions ready. You can call or text. You can email us anytime. We want to hear your questions, but let's do it. Tammy, welcome to the studio today.
Thanks for having me, Michelle.
Thank you for coming. We're happy that you're here. So, Tammy, there have been a rash of airplane incidents lately, or at least it appears so. Tell us a little bit first about what you are flying in your current job.
Currently, I'm flying a Falcon 2000. Unfortunately, there have been a lot of airplane crashes this year.
Yeah. Do you know anything? I mean, do you, as a pilot, I mean, do you monitor crashes? Do you watch and learn from what's going on? Is that something you do as a pilot, or do you specifically?
We do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't know if they all do, but it's definitely, it can be a learning tool.
Yeah.
To read the NTSB reports.
So you read the report.
Sure.
Wow.
They make those public. Usually takes about a year or two for that to become public knowledge, but they have them out there.
Okay. Tell us about your path as a pilot. Where'd you start?
So I started when I was 16. Took my very first flying lesson, first time in an airplane. So
why?
Great question. I have no idea. I just always wanted to be a pilot since I was little.
That's fantastic. So you're one of those lucky people that's always known.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, yes.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So then how'd you get into the profession? What was your path?
I went through the normal stages of gaining ratings, flight instructing, charter pilot. I flew for Fargo Jet Center for a number of years. I did Life Flight for Sanford on the fixed wing side.
Wow.
I did airlines. I flew for Endeavor Air. And then currently I fly for a private company in town here.
Okay. So I am not an aircraft person, but I think that we probably have listeners who are. Tell us about the planes that you've flown in your career.
Sure. So I've flown everything from the small twin prop engine, single engine aircraft, turbine jets, Lear jets, Falcon jets, CRJ 900. When I was with Endeavor, excuse me.
And it's funny when I hear you. You know, I don't know a lot about planes, but when I hear you name those airplanes, we can recognize some of those as being planes that have been recently involved in crashes.
Yeah, two of them for
sure. So you've been flying since you're 16. You've done everything from jets to airmed. And so basically what I'm hearing is you're kind of boring and risk adverse. That's a joke. Not so much, huh? No, but I'm really excited you could be here today because we're seeing so much of this going on. You know, we've had, you know, in backwards order, the January collision of the American Airlines regional jet with a helicopter, so tragic, at Ronald Reagan National Airport. I understand it was the deadliest air disaster in over 20 years.
That's correct.
We've seen a medical jet falling out of the sky in Philadelphia, single plane engine crashes. Not that we know you don't have personal knowledge of the crashes.
Sure.
Kind of like they say to lawyers when they're interviewing them on TV, like, we know this isn't your case, or doctor, we know that this isn't your case.
Right.
But we're just interested in your perspective based on your training and experience. I mean, what observations do you have about what you're seeing, or what we're all seeing?
Yeah, it's a good question, Michelle. And I hate to speak against any decision making that these pilots were making because I wasn't in their situation that they're in. But I do think that in a couple of the cases, you're going to come out with maybe a mechanical issue, maybe something broke in the airplane that the pilots were unaware of. I think some might be chalked up to pilot error. There might be some weather issues that pop up also with a crash.
Yeah.
So it's just, they're going to take into in account, you know, ATC communications, pilot communications, the maintenance records on the aircraft. I mean, everything will get scrutinized through this whole process with the NTSB and the FAA.
Yeah, terrible. Mm-hmm. So as a pilot, safety, what is your role in safety on whatever aircraft you're piloting?
Yeah, safety
is that a
has
word,
to be first.
Piloting? Is that an actual
yes.
word? Okay.
Well,
great. Got that.
Got that, yes. Safety has to come first. Safety of aircraft, passengers, yourself. That's one of the things that pilots, we get trained on early on, is that we can't just take that flight. You can't think that your ego is better than the, whether it's weather or a maintenance thing, that you can still go when you shouldn't be going. So you have to weigh a lot of things out first.
So who makes the rules, so to speak? Like, does a pilot have the call? Does it depend? Like, so, who says we're not going up or we're not landing?
Yeah, good question. The FAA has a ton of rules that we have to fly depending on how, what kind of flying we're doing, whether it's the classification of the type of flying. So it's part 91, so owner operator,
okay.
Part 121, which is airline. We all have a different set of rules that we have to follow. There's also checklists that we follow. So if for a maintenance issue, if we do get any kind of a warning, we have to follow that checklist. And some of those items are going to be go, no go.
Okay.
Weather, that's out of our control totally.
Yep.
But you always have your weather minimums. What's the airplane capable of? What are we capable of as a pilot? How comfortable are you? Have you done these approaches lately? You know.
Wow.
So there's, we have personal ones also, and then there's also manufacturer and then the FAA ones that we have. But at the end of the day, it's a pilot in command.
Wow. So
that makes that decision.
Very regulated, pretty regulated. Lots of rules. So talk a little bit about air traffic control. I'm, you know, again, not my area, but been around long enough to hear for years now concerns about air traffic control and, you know, do we have enough resource? Are we too tired?
Right.
But what's the role of air traffic control just generally?
That they play a huge role in this whole thing too.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are, you know, they keep us safe. They keep us away from other aircraft. We're constantly in communication with them. They work with flow of aircraft going into some of the larger cities. So they're trying to stack us up as far out as they can.
Yeah.
So we all have our positions coming into these airports, but they are, they're tied. They're a little bit, I think their numbers are a little bit down.
Okay.
And I don't know what the cause of that is, but they're a huge role.
Yeah.
And we rely on them tremendously.
Absolutely. So taking now what we saw, I believe yesterday, could have been the day before, but the near collision, mm-hmm. Where the commercial plane landed and lifted off, thankfully, in time to not collide with what I understand to be a private jet.
Correct.
Okay, so are those guys all working on the same system, so to speak? Like, how, I know you can't diagnose that, but how can something like that happen? We want to know.
There's still human error.
Okay.
In this whole equation. And I haven't listened to the audio recordings on that, so the ATC mm-hmm. communications. But typically when an aircraft is coming in to land, all the time when an aircraft is coming in to land, you're listening to tower. And tower clears us to land.
Okay.
Tower also clears you to depart. So we all have that going on.
Okay.
We can hear that, but usually it's somebody was lined up on an opposite runway, or they thought they were cleared to take off instead of just hold position.
Okay.
So.
Wow. All right. Sounds good. Yeah. Well, I've got one more question for you, and then we've got to go to break. So this is my question for you. Can you describe the feeling of the first time you flew?
Oh, exhilarating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And you know what? You answered in one word, and I was going to try to remember to ask you to answer in one word, and you did it anyway. And the smile on your face says it all. So thank you so much. We're going to go to break.
Thank you.
And we'll be back with the Steve Hallstrom Show in just a minute. Welcome back, everyone, to the Steve Hallstrom Show. I am not Steve. I'm Michelle Comer, but I'm really happy to be here with you listeners tonight. I'm waiting for calls, texts, and emails to ask questions of our delightful guest list here today. We just got done speaking with Tammy Bachmeyer. She is a pilot here in Fargo, visiting a little bit about some of the crashes that seem to have been in abundance over the last couple of months. But right now, I'm going to introduce you to a very, very special friend of mine. Her name is also Michelle. We agree that for about 5 years, not going to name the decade, Michelle was like the number one name. But now when you meet anyone named Michelle, we're kind of all approximately the same age, which is fantastic. So Michelle, the whole country is really failing to keep pace with dozens of other countries around the world when it comes to health, and the trends are getting worse, not better. We are lonelier and more isolated than ever, statistics say, and we are even calling loneliness a public health epidemic. You, my friend, wake up early, very, very early every day to change this trend in our community. And I want to hear more about that, and I want our listeners to hear more about that. So what I know is that in 2020, you made a radical choice to start a totally new career journey. And can you start there? You don't have to start there. You can go back. But I want to know about this very radical career choice that you made.
Yes. Well, I have always been a very, my habit is to work out and into fitness and all of that. I love working out. It's a great mental health piece for me, as well as just the physical wellness side of it. And so, I had the opportunity to, be a part of Fly Fitness in a very small way when it very first opened.
Okay. Because, and what is Fly Fitness?
So Fly Fitness is a boutique style gym where we offer, rhythm-based cycling, bar, strength training, HIIT training, and Pilates.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And before 2020, you were not in the biz, so to speak.
I was not. I was just an avid gym goer.
Yep.
And what always have been.
And you have a background in
social work.
Social work.
I was a social worker,
okay.
Stay-at-home mom.
Yep.
I've just been mostly sort of like a caretaker, a helper. Actually, that's one of my strengths, is I'm a helper.
Fantastic.
So that's what I've been doing.
All right.
And got into the gym because I just wanted to work out and I wanted to be with my friends and my daughter, who was an instructor there. And I was 3 months into just working out and actually just working the front desk when the opportunity came up for me to take over as the studio director. And I had a bit of a hesitation, thinking, I have no idea how to run a business. I've never done anything like this in my entire life. And the people that asked me to do that said, we'll train you how to teach you how to run a business. What we need is for you to be a community builder mm-hmm. and someone who can make people feel cared for and comfortable in a fitness environment. And that's totally your strength. And I said, yes, I'm going to try it. I'm going to go for it.
You said yes. You said yes to something that scared you.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
We have a theme going here today.
Yes.
We've got people that do things that scare them. And I think that's not a coincidence. So What makes Fly different than any other fitness community?
Well, of course, you know, I'm quite biased, but I really believe with all my heart that we have one of the most inclusive communities of people. The instructors are just absolutely beyond just the skill they have in helping people find their strength. They are just like the best humans with the greatest hearts, and they know how to build community and make people feel seen and celebrated and supported. That's kind of our theme. And that's what we all strive to do, is just to make every person who walks in the door, because people come in scared. Like, we look at people in the eyes and they're just, we can tell it's like, you know, deer in headlights. Like, I have no idea what I'm about to experience. I know I want to do something. Please help me. Mm-hmm. But yet I'm scared and I don't want to get made fun of or looked at weird, you know,
right?
Or I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
And so we just try to really meet people where they're at and just say, listen, we've all been there, and we have ways to just help you feel safe and supported.
So right now, if you were talking to one of our listeners who's like, you know what, I am lonely. Gym's probably not the first thing that comes to mind, but please hold. So that your listener that you're going to talk to says, I am lonely. I can improve my health. Maybe I need to improve my health, but I don't belong in a gym. I just don't. What's your message to that person, to that listener?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's what sets us apart as a boutique fitness studio, is we're small. You're not going to the Y where you're going to get lost in the crowd and lost at a machine. We're going to know your name. I know the name of every single person at Fly. Mm-hmm. And we're going to know a little bit about your story. And we're going to ask you about your job interview, and we're going to ask you about your family or the baby that you had 6 months ago. And so it's just so personal that it becomes like we're a family. Like my best friends are at Fly, and they're the people I've met, and they're the instructors that are there. Like, it's just, you become family. You become this community of people who really lifts each other up in a really powerful way. And so it is taking a step of being a little nervous and afraid of being seen. Mm-hmm. But once you do, I promise you, you come in and you're not going to be disappointed. Yep. By your experience.
Okay, so I have one more question for you, Michelle. It's a one word question. So if you had one word that you would use to describe that community, what would it be?
One word, Michelle, is very difficult.
I know, and I didn't prepare you for that.
You did not.
No, I
that
didn't.
Wasn't the question you gave me.
Okay, three words.
We say we are positive, we are electric, and we are supportive.
Love it.
Like, those are the three probably biggest words.
I love it. And I know I said one last question, but I got one more. What's the best compliment you've ever received about Fly from one of your members? Like, mm-hmm. What brings tears to your eyes?
It really is. There was a gal who told me way after the fact that her mental health provider told her to go to a gym as therapy, like as part of her therapy plan. And after the fact, after several months, she just said, I've never felt so, a part of something and lifted up in a way that I didn't even know how it would play out for me. But I 100% felt like this was a place for me where I belonged and I was accepted.
That's fantastic. And where can you be found?
Where can I be found? I'm at two places. Downtown on 235 Roberts Street is our downtown location. And then the second studio that we just opened a couple years ago is at near the Osgood Hornbachers.
That is awesome. Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for the work you do in our whole community. Thank you for the work you do in the Fly community. And thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to go to a break, but don't forget to come back for the rest of our night here together on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Good afternoon, everybody. Happy summer. I am not Steve Hallstrom. I'm Michelle Comer, standing in for Steve today, living my dream. And I have had the honor of having a couple great guests, and we have several more coming up here this afternoon. I would love for you to give us a call, give us a text, or give us an email. We call us on the Valley Christian Counseling phone line at 701-271-1100 or text us at 701-237-1100. 1590. I hope everyone out there is at least, if not in the sunshine, enjoying it. Heard that weather report. I like how it's looking, and I like how it's looking in the next couple days. And speaking of sunshine, I have so much sunshine in this room here with me today. We have another special guest. Cody First is with me here in the studio today. Cody is a director at 50 South Capital. She is responsible for sourcing and analyzing venture capital and buyout partnership opportunities, as well as direct co-investment opportunities. I myself understood only a few of those words, so I cannot wait for you to help us understand what that really means and what it means to us here in North Dakota. She's also involved in a lot of fundraising activities and portfolio management. She has a ton of experience. She was previously a program manager at the NICE Center at North Dakota State University, where she supported entrepreneurship programs. And prior to NDSU, she founded, co-founded, and served as the managing partner of Annie Capital, a fund that invested in female founders through funding, education, and community development. Cody, you drove here from West.
West, yes.
West.
Always good to be in Fargo.
Yeah.
And good to be here with you.
How many hours in the car?
It's just four.
Okay, great.
True North Dakotan, when you say it's just four.
It's just, exactly. It's just 4 hours. How was the drive?
It was good. Sunshine, and we definitely are having some fall spring. So grateful to have this compared to what we have had.
Yeah, I'm calling it summer. Last week, we had, I don't know, 2 days of spring. I'm like, happy spring. Tomorrow's going to be summer.
Here we are.
Yeah, here we are. Awesome. Okay, so I just said a lot of big words. I really would love you to tell us, first of all, kind of what brought you into this line of work.
Yeah, well, I don't think the path was linear by any means. And so I grew up on a ranch in southwestern North Dakota, went to NDSU and, you know, was part of a generation, I think, of college kids that were told if you want a good job, you've got to leave North Dakota. And so had the opportunity to travel and live all over the United States, but was very homesick and ready to be back. And thanks to what oil and gas has done to North Dakota and changing the opportunity landscape, you know, across the state, was able to move back over a decade ago and landed back in Western North Dakota, did a lot of different projects and had the opportunity to learn in a ton of different environments. But one of those opportunities was to launch a fund that was called Annie Capital. And we were investing in female founders across primarily North Dakota. And that work really led me into understanding what the entrepreneurial ecosystem was in North Dakota. And
what was it at the time?
At the time, I think people didn't fully even know what those words meant, including me.
Yeah.
But what I did know was there was just an energy, especially in Fargo, of really redefining what it meant to support entrepreneurs. And, you know, that's everything from giving them a stage, but it's also celebrating when things don't go right. And how do we show up for each other in a community standpoint? We know that entrepreneurs and innovation are the number one source of job growth. And so how do we really wrap our arms around those that are brave enough to take the road less traveled? And, that work really gave me the opportunity to work with community stakeholders and, dive into again, what it meant to be a cheerleader for entrepreneurs, both from a capital standpoint, but also from just a partner standpoint. And, in 2021, there was some pretty significant legislation that changed the trajectory of North Dakota. I live in Western North Dakota, so know daily what oil and gas has done for the entire state. But specifically, it's given us an incredible resource that is the Legacy Fund. And we are really lucky to live in a place that has a Legacy Fund that's really designed to grow and help future generations prosper when oil and gas isn't as prevalent as it is today. And so in 2021, there was legislation that really said, what would it look like if we took some of North Dakota's money and actually invested that in North Dakota? And it changed the asset allocation policy of the Legacy Fund to direct a certain percentage into in-state private equity. At that time, I was, you know, figuring out how to be a mom and working at NDSU with supporting entrepreneurship, and got a call from a firm out of Chicago, 50 South Capital, after they had won the opportunity to manage the work. And that turned into an opportunity to join the firm. And it's been an incredible privilege to get to bet on North Dakota every single day, but also continue to advocate for the opportunity set that is here.
All right. So the North Dakota Growth Fund, break it way down. Like, what is it?
Yeah. So that legislation was called House Bill 1425, and that created this in-state equity program. And really our mandate is two things. One, it's to provide a return for the state of North Dakota. And two, it's really to open up access to private capital for entrepreneurs who are looking to either start, scale, grow, or potentially sell their business, and they're in North Dakota. So our work as a general partner is to invest capital into funds that then can invest in North Dakota founders and bring more than just capital to the state. I think that's one of the unique things about private equity is it's expensive. It's a really personal decision for a founder or an owner to decide to partner with private equity. But hopefully, if you're doing it right, you're getting more than just capital. You're getting someone who understands how to scale. You're getting someone who has access to co-investors and upstream investors and strategic partners and talent, because the number one thing a company does when they raise capital is go hire some people to help them move faster. And so our work is really centered on how do we find funds and partner with funds that can bring, again, more than just capital into North Dakota. And then we also have the ability to directly invest in companies that are a little bit later stage.
So it really is betting on yourself. I mean,
yes.
And we've got a legislator in the room. We're going to introduce him later. There's a lot of work going on in Bismarck right now, as there was at this time 4 years ago. And I think we really have to be thankful collectively to our legislative body to making that happen. So can you talk a little bit about what's happened in the last 4 years with this North Dakota Growth Fund?
Yeah, and you know, echo the hat tip to the statewide officials, both, I think, for advocating, for knowing what's in our backyard, and for doing the really hard work to, you know, run a process that made the right most sense for North Dakota. And so, yeah, to date, we've been able to commit $89 million. That's gone into five funds, and those range everything from really early stage funds like a generator that supports companies when they're just starting out to much later stage funds like a Longwater that is a fund in Fargo that invests in more buyout opportunities when a company is looking to transition. And so those five funds are diverse on the strategies they invest in, on the stages they invest in, but all share our commitment to North Dakota and our conviction in North Dakota. That capital that we've invested has now impacted over 40 companies across the state. Our portfolio is now invested over $150 million into North Dakota companies, and it's in every vertical that touches North Dakota. I think the stat that I'm the most proud of is that it's everywhere from Fargo, Grand Forks, Minot, Bismarck, Williston, but also some really small towns across the state that, you know, have someone who's working on something in their backyard and can do that from home.
That's fantastic. Okay, so speaking of companies, like, this is where the rubber meets the road, because we're talking, you know, kind of complex concepts from the legacy fund to the growth fund and into the funds that you invest in. Ultimately, they get to a person or a team of people who has an idea and bravery and courage. And you've no doubt seen some of those stories, 40 of them, it sounds like. So tell us about some of them. Tell us your favorite story.
Yeah, I think the one that comes to mind is a company called Pavewise. The founder's name is Bryce Worry, and he's a construction engineer. He was, you know, working in consulting, had hired an outsourced software shop to build out a tech platform that he was using in his company. And we had the chance to meet him at a meetup in Bismarck, and he said, you know, I'm not a tech founder. I know nothing about venture capital, but I think my customers would buy this even if I wasn't using it. And so went through some of Generator's work, ended up raising a seed round. I think he was the first oversubscribed seed round in the state, hired his first CTO, now has a team, is serving, you know, hundreds of thousands of worth of dollars worth of pavement across the U.S. and, you know, is doing it here.
Wow. That's absolutely fantastic. One more story.
Well, I think the one that, you know, probably locally everyone can appreciate is Bushel is part of our portfolio. And, you know, those are farm kids who grew up at the end of a dirt road and figured out how to revolutionize software for the ag industry, which touches every single one of our lives, and whether indirectly or directly. And so fun to see them continuing to build here, continuing to be a leader in ag tech. And I think in software specifically around that industry, you need people who know how to run a tractor, and they all do and celebrate that. So that's been fun to see their growth as well.
Very cool. All right. We've got a one-word question. We have this theme going with all of our guests. So if you could give us one word when I tell you, when I name this phrase, okay, so one word, your reaction to starting a company in North Dakota. What's one word that
comes
to mind? Smart. I love it. That's fantastic. Wonderful. Well, Cody, you and I have known each other for some time, ran into each other back during the Lyft committee days. And I want to thank you, one, for driving yourself all the way here to join us here on the Steve Hallstrom Show, and two, just for bringing your energy and passion to your job every day. We're going to go to a commercial and come back to the Steve Hallstrom Show after break. Welcome back, everybody. Happy sunny summer day here in Fargo, North Dakota. Excuse me. We are so excited to have in our studio today Representative Greg Seaman on the Steve Hallstrom Show. If you are just joining us, you will note that I am not Steve Hallstrom. My name is Michelle Comer, and I am guest hosting in place of Steve today. It is a privilege and an honor, and one of my dreams come true to be sitting here talking to you on the radio. I know that Steve treasures you, his listeners, and it's just a thrill to be here. If you weren't here at the beginning, I did mention that second to my dream of being a radio show host is driving a Zamboni. And I know there's got to be someone out there who can help me out with that. We need you to call us with a Zamboni referral or with questions for Representative Greg Steeman on the Valley Christian Counseling phone line at 701-271-1100. You can also email us at studio@flagfamily.com or text us. It comes directly to the studio at 701-237-1590. All right. Representative Greg Steeman is a member of the North Dakota House of Representatives. He joined me the last time I was here guest hosting, which would have been the first time. Representative Steeman, as I said, represents District 27. Two things, Representative Steeman, to kick off. One, I want to say thank you for your service. I know that you are in session right now. We have a citizen legislature. You have a day job as a business banking officer at Starion. I'd like to thank your employer, too. And the second thing I'd like to say is I'm deeply sorry for the loss of your colleague, Josh Christie. I know that that had to have hit you hard as your running mate and a friend, and we're all sorry for that loss.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle. And people have been very supportive, very understanding. You know, keep Mary and the girls in your prayers as they continue to adapt to the situation and the circumstances surrounding everything that took place. But no, a great guy to serve with.
Yeah,
gone way too soon.
Absolutely.
But leaves a major legacy with his beautiful family and girls, and actually he did a great job in the legislature as well.
That's what I understand. It's just a terrible loss. It's unspeakable. But so thank you for being here. And Greg, you and I have known each other for a few years. And what I know of you as a legislator is that you are thoughtful, you are diligent, you are open-minded, and you are humble, so you're going to hate those things I just said. But I am talking about you, and I'm talking about a legislator. And I think, you know, I have some experience working in Bismarck with legislators, and I admire the work. So I would love to learn about what's going on in Bismarck. First of all, tell us what is special about this week in particular.
Well, this is crossover, and as you've mentioned, I think earlier in your program, and this is the time of session where the House started, I believe, with approximately 670 bills and resolutions.
Wow.
The Senate, I think, maybe close to 400, maybe a little over 400.
My goodness!
And so we had 34 days to get into committee, have hearings on each and every piece of legislation. North Dakota is one of the very few states, if not the only state, that allows every bill to get a hearing. Every bill gets brought to the floor.
Wow.
And so this led to some long days. And I'm fortunate enough I did serve on policy committees my first session, and then the past two sessions I've been on House Appropriations. And it's amazing when you sit on a surplus, a lot of policy bills have money attached to them. So we had to go through all of those, as well as the agency budgets.
Talk about the difference between a policy bill and a budget bill.
Well, very good question. Thank you for asking. In policy, typically we're looking at, you know, making laws, hopefully that allow our citizens to have a better life experience, have a better business experience, have a better whatever situation that this legislation has been brought forth. And a lot of them don't involve having to be financed or paid for. Other, you know, the appropriation side of things, you look at projects. People have ideas or you know, where we can invest money, where we can help stand things up with some funding issues. You had Cody on, and she addressed the House Bill 1425, which we look at those things as a legislature. I really, one of the things that I've appreciated about the legislature is how forward-thinking they have been. And Cody referenced the Legacy Fund. I think the Legacy Fund and the Common Schools Trust Funds are two revenue-generating assets that are incredibly valuable to the future of our state. Mm-hmm. And when we're a state that relies on volatile commodity prices, mm-hmm. you like to have that stability of revenue-producing assets, and hopefully they can continue to grow.
So can you break down, just on the off chance that we have someone in the audience named Michelle who doesn't really perfectly understand the origins of the Common School Trust Fund, the Legacy Fund, what is that?
Well, I can address the Legacy Fund probably with a little more from a little more backgrounded position, because it was something that, you know, when oil production picked back up in North Dakota, I think everybody remembered what it was like during the end of the previous boom, mm-hmm. and how things really went south in a hurry. And I thought their thought process of saying, well, let's take a portion of the earnings, oil and gas earnings, and let's establish a fund based on historical performance of markets going south or production going south. Let's not allow ourselves to be tied to what the oil market is doing. Let's invest in the future of our state and start putting this fund together. Now, nobody realized it was going to be bumping up against $12 billion this soon into it.
Isn't that incredible? And looping back to what you said a moment ago, how strategic, how forward-thinking?
Very much so. Yeah. And it can be a double-edged sword. A lot of people look at it and say, it's kind of like the kid that spends all his money and looks at mom and dad's 401k and say, hey, I'd like to have some of that.
Yeah.
But that's for the future.
Yeah.
And this is what this fund is. However, this fund is generating, this biennium will generate $600 million that we put back into our state.
That's incredible. Okay, can you connect the dots between that and Cody? I know you were here when Cody was talking about the North Dakota Growth mm-hmm. Fund. So you just explained we've got $12 billion in the Legacy Fund, which is just an interest generating $600 million.
Correct. In earnings.
Yep. In earnings. That is, it's part of that money that funds the North Dakota Growth Fund.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We have a number of revenue generating assets, the Legacy Fund, obviously the largest of all those. And what we want to do is strategically allow people in our state, mm-hmm. and you heard Cody talk about whether they're starting a business, whether they're looking to grow or expand a business. And what Cody and her people do in private equity, they dive into these things. And I think businesses benefit from being involved with them, but they do an excellent job of due diligence to say, we want to make sure that the state of North Dakota is setting themselves up to get the best possible return on these types of investments in North Dakota-based businesses. And so I really appreciate that as a longtime citizen of North Dakota. And it also kind of, to your point, great job on your part to kind of bring all this together. It's all interconnected, and we all benefit when we do things wisely and do it in a deliberate manner.
All right. Wonderful. Well, you know what? I'm looking forward to you staying through this next break because we have a lot more to talk about. I'm going to ask you what the most important bill is in the legislature. I want to talk about blackout plates.
Mm-hmm.
Come back for more of Representative Greg Steeman and the Steve Hallstrom Show. Good afternoon. It is 5:06 here in sunny Fargo-Moorhead on the Steve Hallstrom Show. If you're just joining us, you might recognize that I am not Steve Hallstrom. I am Michelle Comer, and I have a break from my day job at High Road Partners, where we provide HR and benefit services to employers in the region. Thank you to my team for giving me the afternoon off, and welcome back Representative Greg Steeman from District 27 here in Fargo. We were getting to some good stuff right before break. We were talking about what crossover is, what's mm-hmm. been going on, the number of bills that you have in the House, that you have in the Senate. And we were just getting to the good stuff. So here's a question for you. As it is right now, what do you think the most important bill is before the House?
Well, one of the first ones we did pass out of the House was the Secretary of State's budget. You know, and Michael Howe out of Castleton, we got to watch that guy pretty carefully. But no, I will tell your listeners that Michael doesn't get enough credit. He's been Secretary of State for a while and a good friend and does a great job as our Secretary of State.
Yeah. But he may or may not have suggested.
He may or may not have. Yeah, I take requests when I'm on the radio.
Very good secretary. Yeah. Well played.
And but, you know, what we just passed over, the House just passed over three substantial property tax reform relief packages, ranging anywhere from mid $100 million to up over, I believe, maybe $600 million, depending on how they're implemented, what parts that we take. And so some people are saying, why would you send three? I think there's actually some positive aspects to all of those House bills that we sent over. So the Senate's going to have some work to do, without question. And the other one, and I'm not going to ignore this, one of the things that just came through was we voted down fully funding school lunches. Mm-hmm. But I want to make people aware that we currently fund at 200% of poverty level. So anybody at 200% of poverty level or lower, which I believe right now is in the neighborhood of $63,000 for a family of four, they don't have to pay for a school lunch. And our thought process is, yes, we want to provide it for the most needy. Mm-hmm. But we had a bill come through that would have cost us about $140 million per biennium. And we just thought that price tag was a little high, and we just think there are people that need the help, but there are a number of people that are okay paying what they're able to. And so, but going back to the property tax, Michelle, I think that was kind of the hot button topic for the majority of the citizens in North Dakota.
Yep, and it sounds like a priority for the legislature and the governor's office.
Without question.
Do you feel good about where that's going, where that's heading?
I believe that we've got, you know, with all three that we passed out of the House, I believe the governor's priorities, I think, are met with parts of each one of those pieces of legislation. And Governor Armstrong, I think, made it a priority in his campaign. Mm-hmm. Will he get everything he wants? We'll see. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's the legislature sometimes says, well, no, we'll give you this, but you also have to accept this. So we'll see what the end product looks like. But I believe the majority of property owners in the state will experience some level of benefit.
All right. So you made me think of something. You know, we've got the legislature who makes the laws, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Our governor who very much influences that process. What, at this point in the session, what is the tone in Bismarck, in that building? How are you feeling?
Actually, I think with Kelly's experience, you know, he has a background in the legislature. I think he understands the value of communication. I think he understands the value of having conversations with individuals and listening as well as providing his insight. I think he understands, listen, compromise is what this is all about. The greater good is what this is all about. We have to have a balanced budget, mm-hmm. and we can't provide for every want and need. But hopefully we're prioritizing in a way that is seen as responsible by the majority of the people of North Dakota. We're not going to do things that make everybody happy, but I believe the process works very well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that the people maybe don't get enough exposure to, is the fact that 141 people work very hard at understanding these pieces of legislation to the best of their ability in the time that they're allotted, and hopefully pass out the best, most well-thought-out legislation out of committee, and that goes to the floor. So I will say this. I do think there's a spirit of, hey, we're going to work together to do what's best for the state of North Dakota, and I think Kelly exemplifies that in the governor's office.
That's fantastic. And I know that you mean that, and you're not just saying it because Kelly's boss is on the phone.
Yeah.
Waiting to have a conversation with
us. It's a tough job for her to keep him in line.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not a job that every person could do.
Yeah. So we're going to get back to you, Representative Steeman, a little later in the program to close things out. But we do have a very special guest waiting on the line. The First Lady of North Dakota has agreed to join us here so that we can get to know her better. Kirsty Armstrong became the first lady when Governor Armstrong was sworn in on December 15th of 24 as the 34th governor of North Dakota. Kirsty is a proud North Dakotan with a unique path, which we're going to talk more about shortly. Kirsty currently serves as senior vice president and general counsel of an e-commerce company. I have to note that I first met our first lady in law school a few years ago, and she was a class ahead of me. That does not make her older than me, just to be clear. And I admired her then, and I am confident that if you do not already know her by the end of our conversation here this evening, you will as well. Kirsty has extensive experience in the oil and gas industry, including serving on the board of directors for the North Dakota Petroleum Council and other numerous other nonprofit boards and commissions, and through which she has herself made a tremendous impact both on our state and on our nation. So, First Lady Armstrong, are you with us?
I am. Thanks for having me on, Michelle.
Oh my gosh, we're so happy that you could join us. Thank you so much for taking my call and for agreeing to this short notice as I'm standing in for Steve on the Steve Hallstrom Show. So I would love for our listeners to get to know you better outside of your role as the First Lady of North Dakota, and then we'll talk a little bit about what's coming next in that role. So could you start by telling us about your path to this state?
I can, and you were an early part of that just a couple of years ago, right?
Just a couple.
Yeah, so I came over. I was in law school in Oslo, Norway at the University of Oslo, and we had the longest-running exchange program between Europe and the U.S. It was between the University of Oslo and UND. So it was a few professors that had met at a conference that started a very informal program. And it lasted for, I think, about 3 decades.
My goodness.
So that's what I came over on, and my mom did caution me not to meet a boy because she didn't want me to move so far away. But I did, and I was there for a semester. Kelly and I continued to date transatlantic for a couple of years, and then we got married, and I came back to get an American law degree.
My goodness.
And that's when I met you.
That's when we met. Okay. So that puts things in context. So one of the things that's always been fascinating to me is your almost complete lack of an accent. So am I to understand that you were born in Norway and you speak Norwegian?
I do. And actually, my mother is visiting, so I'm speaking more Norwegian these days than typical.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So can you say the Steve Hallstrom Show is amazing in Norwegian?
Steve Hallstrom's show er fantastisk.
Oh my gosh, that's really cool. We're going to do more of that. Okay, so that's how you got to North Dakota, and now we know too.
I have to point out too that there's more of me. There's been about one marriage on average per year that the program ran.
Oh my goodness. That is an incredible.
There are counterparts in the state and in Norway.
Side benefit. Okay, Kirsty, we are going to go to a quick break. So you hold on. We've got a lot more to cover. When we come back after this break, join us with the First Lady of North Dakota on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Welcome back, everyone. Happy sunny afternoon here in Fargo, North Dakota on the Steve Hallstrom Show. This is Michelle Comer sitting in for Steve and enjoying the privilege of having our First Lady of North Dakota on the line with us, Kirsty Armstrong. Just spent a few minutes with us before break talking about her path to North Dakota, and where we left off was Kirsty telling us that the North Dakota UND University of Oslo law programs have produced about one marriage per year over their 30 years of existence. And I think that's pretty fantastic. I might even call that workforce and economic development. So way to go.
There you go.
Yes. Way to go, UND. That is amazing. So Kirsty, tell us about your career. You are obviously an attorney, and you have journeyed, as you said, transatlantically. I can't say that very well, but across the ocean. You came a long, long way. You Americanized your law degree, and a lot of people in our state now know you as the First Lady. We'll talk about that in a minute, but tell us about you as an individual.
Yeah, I love my career as a lawyer, but I have to point out that I'm first and foremost a mom. So that's Absolutely. Something I juggle with my day-to-day life. We have two teenagers in high school, and they're in lots of activities.
My goodness. Yes.
But day job is being a lawyer, which I love. I've had lots of different roles, both in private and public roles, and I've enjoyed all of them.
So when you got out of law school, what kind of law did you practice?
So while I was in law school, I got practice papers, and I worked for a law firm. And North Dakota is kind of unique in that sense that law students, if they work under the supervision of a lawyer, can practice in court. So that was great. And then I went to the district court in the Southwest Judicial District. I was there for a long time. Our kids were young early on in my stint there. It's just fantastic job for a law nerd like me. I had wonderful judges that I
law
worked
nerd.
For that I... Yeah, and I had wonderful coworkers and amazing judges I worked for that I've stayed in touch with and that taught me a lot and that I admire. One of them went to an oilfield service company after he retired from the bench, and he recruited me there. So okay. That's how I ended up in oil and gas, which had been something my family was in North Dakota, in Norway, and my North Dakota family is heavily involved in oil and gas.
My goodness. And I bet so interesting during the time that you've been there. So much going on in North Dakota.
It was very much so. Some ups and downs. I was part of some of the downs.
Mm-hmm.
So, oil and gas, as we know, it's not always at cruising altitude.
Yep. And some of our best professional lessons are often learned the hard way. And
I completely agree with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm hesitating to ask this question, but I would imagine, and myself included, that, you know, you just mentioned mom first and having teenagers and activities and being busy, and you're working as an attorney. Do you have any advice? Do you have any advice for other people that are similarly situated for managing all of the, you know, proverbial balls that we have in the air? And you have a few more than most of us.
It's tricky. So I think it's important to remember that you can only do your best.
Yeah.
You can't be perfect all the time. Nobody is. And then just to focus on what's most important to you. I believe in hard work and dedication to your profession, but kids always come first.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's wonderful. Well, and good advice. I think there are a lot of people, and myself included, that can take that one home with us tonight. So, well, let's talk.
Well, and it's tricky, right? You get stretched in different directions all the time. I think we can all relate to that.
Yeah, so true. Absolutely true. Okay, so in December of 2024, you became the First Lady of the state of North Dakota. And
Yes.
So tell us what that means to you.
I mean, it's a little surreal. It's the biggest privilege of my life and of Kelly's, and we take that responsibility very seriously. So we are just really back to doing our best. We want to do our best for our state.
Yep. So what do you anticipate your involvement will be? I know that it varies so much from one administration to the next. You may have missed my joke earlier today. I've tried to be funny anyway, when I said to Representative Steeman, who was speaking very with admiration about Governor Armstrong's work with the legislature, that I wondered if he was saying that because he knew that Governor Armstrong's boss would be on the line soon, which
I like that.
He assured me he wasn't. But yeah. So what is this going to look like for you as First Lady of North Dakota?
Yeah, I think Kelly and I, first and foremost, are partners, and we bounce things off of each other. I want to make his very demanding job easier. So what I do needs to complement what the administration sets out to do and what Kelly is working on. But it's a privileged position to be in, right? There's you have the opportunity to actually make a difference.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to waste that.
Oh man. Well, that's awesome. Well, guess what? There is someone on the line who we're going to bring on to ask a couple questions. Governor Armstrong, welcome. Welcome to the Steve Hallstrom Show. Thank you for calling in.
Well, I appreciate it. I was listening to it. I'm mostly just wondering how she's handling having me home every night.
That is a question
We are adjusting. No, it's great to have him home. We can actually have family dinners, and he gets to go through our kids' activities, and that's wonderful.
I think that's fantastic.
I was just listening a little. I was just listening a little bit, and I think she oversells my partnership. You know, being in Congress for 6 years, she does all this, and about 2/3 of the time, she's at home alone taking care of the kids. So, and on top of that, having a career and doing all of the other stuff. So, hopefully being home a little more lets me help a little bit more. So we're going to try and do that too.
Oh, I think that's...
But I do radio enough. I'm going to let you two talk some
more. Yes. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Governor. And before you go, I will just say again, I think I am not alone in feeling just so happy, thrilled, and hopeful that the two of you are in the roles that you're in. So we'll let you go. We've got some other things to talk about.
Thanks, Michelle.
All right. Take care. All right. I hope that I'm not in trouble for that little surprise.
Not at all. That was a nice surprise.
No. So... back to you and North Dakota, Kirstie. So, hopes and dreams for our state. You get to have them too in your role. You know what? And you have such a just really beautiful story about how you got to this state, among probably a number of other choices. And now we know how it was that you came to stay. What are your hopes and dreams for your kids in as it pertains to the state?
I have to start by saying that I think it's already the best place to live and to raise a family. We're all privileged to live in North Dakota. That doesn't mean that there aren't things that we can do even better. And I think, you know, it's so divided right now. Something I really hope for our state is that we can just raise above the global trend of conflict and have a little less contempt for one another and more civility. Mm. That's my number one dream.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you have such a unique perspective, you know, not having been born here. I think you have a unique ability to really zoom out and one, see our state differently and possibly even more lovingly than some folks, including...
Well, and I do see all the great things and how incredibly lovely North Dakotans are. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that we're not. I just think that we can put some of the anger aside and just move towards passion. I think disagreeing is very healthy and it's part of democracy. It's something we should nurture. But it can be done without contempt.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. I think you are not alone. You're a voice for many. So, Kirstie, I have one more question for you, and that is, what is one word that describes the governor in the morning?
Ooh, can I a combination? He's very.
You can say it in Norwegian if you want.
He's very thirsty for coffee every morning.
Okay.
He wakes up. I would say if he doesn't get that coffee right away, the word might be grumpy.
Okay.
But as soon as he gets that cup of coffee, it moves to being productive.
Oh.
He's a very, very hardworking and efficient man. So it starts early in the morning.
That is fantastic. Well, Kirstie, again, I cannot thank you enough for joining us here. Can you tell me how to say thank you in Norwegian? Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I think I can do that. Well, Tuck, thank you so much.
Yeah.
We hope you have a wonderful evening. And again, just thank you for your service. Thank you for your family service and your sacrifice.
Thanks for having me on, Michelle. And thank you, by the way, for introducing Kelly at the campaign kickoff. I think that's what sets the tone for success.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for that nice compliment. Surely not, but it was absolutely an honor. So thank you. Thank you both.
You were great.
All right. You take care. We're going to go to a break and come back after a few with Representative Steeman. Good afternoon, everyone. It is 5:35 here on this sunny early evening at the Steve Hallstrom Show. If you're just joining us, we don't have too much time left together, but we're going to spend it well. I'm Michelle Comer, sitting in for Steve Hallstrom, and I am here with Representative Greg Seaman from District 27. We have had the privilege today, over the last couple hours, of having some really fantastic guests, including our governor and first lady who just left, and we learned a lot more about Kirsty and her journey to North Dakota and her plans for the future. And I think I'm probably not alone being really excited about what's next for North Dakota. So Representative Seaman and I started the hour talking about the happenings in Bismarck. We are in literally the middle of session crossover, the point in time where each of the chambers wraps up some work and sends those bills on to over to the other chamber to work them through. And so we're going to keep talking about what we have going on out there, Representative Steeman. So we talked about what your thoughts were about the most important bill before the legislature. I want to change that question and ask you, what bill are you most excited about?
I'm going to reference a bill that basically it kind of found me. And it was a difficult family situation and family law situation, put it that way, Michelle. And what the initial product that I went in there and testified in front of committee needed some work. And what I mean by that is, when I say needed some work, as a legislator, we do not have staff. Mm-hmm. But what we do have is we have what we call legislative counsel, which is a large staff of attorneys, of fiscal analysts, things like that, who literally will write legislation for us, and hopefully in a manner that is productive and something that people can embrace, and it, you know, eventually becomes law. And what happened with this is at the first hearing I was at, it was a hard sell. It was a little bit difficult, and so it gave me a chance to go back and sit down with legislative counsel, who, by the way, our legislative counsel people are fantastic. John Bjornson does a great job, and Alan Knutson on the fiscal side, and the number of different people they have working for him. But
so, Representative Steeman, are they attorneys or like?
Okay. A lot of them are, and then there are fiscal analysts who are necessarily they have accounting background, wow, whatever it might be. So yeah, they have a great staff of attorneys that write a lot of policy, and so I was able to sit down. And then the great thing about it is there was one of the government agencies was also involved in this. And they literally sat down together and said, let's come up with the best, most well-crafted legislation we can.
Wow.
And they found a solution and went back next committee meeting, and they acted on it. And it passed out of committee with a unanimous due pass. And then it passed out of the House with a unanimous due pass. And that's just, to me, that's how government's supposed to work.
That's incredible. And so I'm not going to say that that's rare, that circumstance is rare, but that unanimous vote, I mean, again, I was in Bismarck for 4 years. I don't know if I ever saw a unanimous vote.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It doesn't happen, but that's, from my standpoint, it's me getting out of the way and let the professionals do their job and communicate and work together for the best possible outcome. And then all I have to do is carry that and put that in the hands of a bill carrier, or the committee does that. The body then does the rest. They listen to the bill carrying speech, and they get, and if they have questions, they ask for clarification. And once that was done, it was just an example of how you don't necessarily give up on something.
Mm-hmm.
Put it in the hands of people who are capable. Was able to do that. And so we'll see. Senate still has to act on it.
Yep.
Committee has to act on it on the Senate side. But that was very rewarding, you know, as a legislator.
Absolutely.
Where you go, what levers can I pull? What resources are available to me? And I just, the human capital that we have out there working that wants to do things for the betterment of our state, people would be very pleased with the people they cross paths with.
I love to hear that. I think that's something that everybody would be really relieved. Like First Lady Armstrong said, you know, we're in an environment where it doesn't always work that way.
Yep.
And I think it's also another example, you know, you said that legislation found you. I think it is incredible that we live in a state where every citizen of this state has the opportunity and the access to make an impact, to make change. So I think that's kind of another dimension of that example.
It really is, Michelle, and it's a very accurate observation. I believe our state legislature is as accessible as any in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And we represent approximately just under 17,000 people per district.
Okay.
We have two representatives, well, and Josh Christie, who we addressed right away, has passed away. Kristen Roars is our senator. Mm-hmm. I think Kristen does a fantastic job on the Senate side, and she's a great resource for me. And so it's, yeah, there's a lot of good people that want to do good things. To your point, to Kirstie's point, yes, we've got a ways to go. We've got to find a way to find common ground with those that we work with. And I think we're moving in that direction. It just doesn't always happen as fast as we want it, right? Mm-hmm.
So how excited are you for the weekend?
I'm looking forward to it. It'll be good.
And I might understand you get a little bit of time off a day.
A little bit. We'll have Representative Christie's memorial service tomorrow evening, funeral on Friday, but then have a few days to kind of clock out a little bit, and then got to head back out and have a meeting on Tuesday, and then we're back in session on Wednesday.
All right. Yeah. Well, we have just a few more minutes here.
Yeah.
So one of the pieces of legislation that caught my eye, because it's kind of sexy, is those blackout license plates.
I'll go back to Senator Roars. She, we had been contacted by a constituent, and she was the first one to respond to the email. I enjoy having interactions with constituents who will send us emails at times, whether they agree with me or not. But I'm going to get back to the blackout plates you're discussing.
Yeah.
Senator Roars ran with that.
Okay.
I will say, I mean, she's got a good ally in the House. Our House Appropriations Chair is a gentleman, fantastic guy, by the way, by the name of Don Vigasaw, former car dealer.
All
he
right.
said, I'm on board. You know, and so I think we're going to have some muscle in the House
nice.
To maybe get that through. And we think North Dakotans are getting closer to having the option of the blackout plates.
Yeah. Well, and did Minnesota come out with those just a few years ago?
I believe so. Yeah, okay. It's recent.
And they look really nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So serious question. And I was serious mm-hmm. about really liking those license plates.
Yep.
But, you know, there are things. I mean, is there a reason to be opposed to that? And I ask that recalling that a decision like changing our highway patrol cars from, you know, one color to the next, you know, could have safety implications.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a reason to not support that bill?
To this point, none that I've heard.
Okay.
And, you know, because I think North Dakota's always, people have thought, well, it's really a pretty attractive plate. You
yeah.
know what I mean? But there's something about the black license plate and that where people like that, it's a nice look.
Yep.
I think there's people that think that, and it's really not going to have a fiscal impact on the state, but it's just going to be another option that's available.
I'm embarrassed to say I read the whole thing, including the fiscal note, because
what was the fiscal note?
I don't remember, but it wasn't
substantial.
No, it wasn't. In fact, I want to say that eventually, you know, like it pays for itself.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No.
And
that's how it works.
Yeah.
You know, you talked about it. That's how legislation, you know, evolves at times, and we try to be as responsive as we can, and I would love to be able to respond positively to everybody. We'd love to be able to put everything in every budget.
Yeah,
we just have to make some discerning decisions at times, and that's why we serve as we accept that role and understand that that's the road we have to walk.
Yeah, and that's probably a good place to kind of close. You know, I look at this bill or that bill because I'm interested from a business perspective or some other perspective, but what you just said and what I'm hearing and know to be the case is that this legislative body has to consider the entirety of the budget, and pretending there's a box, which is, mm-hmm. you know, a fiscal limitation, has to figure out how to fit as many things as you can in that box. And that is a hard, hard job.
It is. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of communication. It takes a lot of trust in leadership. And I think that the thing that I would suggest to your listeners, don't ever assume you know why a legislator voted the way they did.
Oh, that's an interesting point.
The number of different reasons, the number of different impacts, the number of mm-hmm. different communications we may have had, the additional information we may have gathered, the experiences that we've had in our own lives.
Mm-hmm.
Just I would suggest that just please don't ever assume you know why someone did or didn't vote the way you hoped they would vote. There may be a very interesting and important story behind the thought process.
Yep, grace and understanding. And I think that's what our First Lady was talking about earlier, too.
Absolutely.
Impressive. Well, we are just about out of time because today is a special day. We at the Flag are going to go to the pregame for the MSUM Dragons versus Wayne State Wildcats NSIC Women's Basketball Tournament. Before we run, I want to say thank you again to my team at High Road Partners. Thank you, Representative Steeman, and all of our special guests today. Thank you, Steve Hallstrom, for trusting me to stand in his shoes. And most of all, thank you to Steve's listeners. And finally, Addison, thanks for your help. Have a great evening, everyone, and come back tomorrow for the Steve Hallstrom Show.